It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Museums and universities around the country hold the remains of tens of thousands of Indigenous people in their collections. Decades after a federal law seeks their return to tribal nations, we learn about ProPublica's repatriation project tracking. Come into the conversation about repatriation, questions about institutions and government agencies holding human remains. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ash New is a reporter, designer, and developer with ProPublica's news app team. Ash, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. And Mary Huditz is a ProPublica reporter focusing on tribal issues throughout the Southwest. Mary, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's take stock, Mary, of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. More than 30 years after the passage, what has your investigation found?
Our investigation has found that in the past 30 years under NAGPRA, that more roughly 600 institutions still hold more than 100,000 human remains taken from Native American grave sites. And just fewer than half of what institutions originally reported holding has been returned to tribes for a variety of reasons.
What are those variety of reasons? Why have some museums and universities made little headway on this work?
There's a range of answers to that. I think we often hear, I believe even including from institutions in Wisconsin, that NAGPRA is complicated, that it is expensive. It is that way, I think, for tribes as well, we've been told. And then in addition, I think a lot of institutions, which is a part of our work and our investigation, have determined that most of the remains that institutions still hold under NAGPRA have been declared culturally unidentifiable, which means that the institution has determined that they cannot decide which and if a present day tribe can be the the recipient of these collections under the law. So that they cannot determine a tie between the human remains, the ancestors, and the tribes today.
So those remains stay very much in limbo in that situation. Ash, how does Wisconsin compare to other states?
So I think we can look at Wisconsin from the institutional perspective. So what are the institutions that are based in Wisconsin doing? And we can also look at it from the other sort of slightly different perspective, which is what are institutions that have remains taken from what is now present day Wisconsin? What are they doing with the remains that they have reported? Kind of on both of those metrics, the Midwest region in general, there's a history of displacement. There's a history of sort of burial mounds in the area being excavated, having remains taken, looted from those regions. And so in Wisconsin, what the records are saying is that about 36% of the more than 3,300 Native American remains that were taken from the state, only 36% have been made available for return to tribes. And that compared to, other states like perhaps Alaska, Hawaii, some of the Pacific Northwest states is relatively low. And there's a, like Mary was saying, there's a variety of reasons for that.
Let's bring on a call now. Aaron in Oshkosh. Aaron, what would you like to raise?
Yes. Hello. I'm good. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to a couple of these shows that you've been doing recently. And frankly, I'm just dumbfounded and alarmed by the number of remains that they're saying are culturally unidentifiable when we have genetic testing at our disposables available for us to use so easily these days. So what's the situation there?
Aaron, thank you. Mary, why not genetic testing and other technological advancements here?
I have a couple of answers or thoughts in response to that question. Say about genetic testing specifically, There are limited instances where it has occurred, but on NAGPRA collections, very, very often, tribes actually are opposed to ancient DNA analysis. It was a very destructive approach to researching remains. It has, I believe, become less destructive in recent years, but still is. And then, in addition, NAGPRA doesn't require institutions. It's in the law to conduct additional research to determine who to repatriate to. And then, third, a lot of, I think, in regards to the question about the culturally identifiable label overall, a lot of these remains actually come with information. So they're determined culturally identifiable a lot of times, even though there is clear geographic information, where exactly they came from. I think the burial, the items that individuals are buried with sometimes can provide information about cultural ties to the present. And so, and then tribes themselves also have an understanding of where they come from, their histories. And so, yes, the genetic and DNA analysis does exist now, but there's also a lot of information that is available to institutions to make determinations without doing analysis.
I want to look at one institution in particular, Ash. Milwaukee Public Museum has in your database the 19th largest collection of unrepatriated Native remains in the country, at least 1,600 not available to tribes. What does that mean when museums don't make them available for return?
Yeah, so that phrasing, what we mean by that is they haven't gone through the NAGPRA process. They haven't filed what is called a notice of inventory completion that would say, would list out which tribes are determined to either be culturally affiliated or through another process called disposition, sort of determined to be the tribes to which the museum will transfer the remains.
So you're saying that because that process hasn't started, you use that language, not available for a return.
Yeah. So, you know, after these notices are completed for some institutions, it still might take months, even years, for the physical repatriation of those remains to happen. Depending on resources, sometimes the tribes aren't able to find land or an appropriate site to rebury, or have other sort of conflicts with arranging the transport of these remains, potentially over, you know, thousands of miles, as some tribes are not located in the same areas where the museums are.
Ash New is with us, and Mary Hudetz, our reporters with ProPublica, as we talk about the return of ancestral remains and their repatriation project, what it has seen. You can join in the conversation, your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Mary, you mentioned that repatriation is costly. What are some of the costs that universities and museums would, and state agents, government agencies would incur?
On the on that on the institutional side, I think it's often, sort of reviewing your collections and the time that might take to sort of decide, if they can be culturally, if remains can be affiliated to a tribe. And then occasionally, I'm not sure actually what institutions might incur with tribal travel, but they might bring in Native people from specific tribes to have meetings and consultation about the remains that they hold or the collections that they hold. So that can be part of the tribe. I think where we see a lot of, I think tribes like to also note that they incur quite a bit of cost as well. And they do it, that cost adds to their larger budgets of providing, for their people, basic services that any government should and can provide. And so that also can be costly, and they're traveling to these institutions often from different corners of the country to review collections and try to make claims. And they also do their own research too of geographic information, available archaeological information.
I thought it was interesting and noticed some variation between remains versus returning funerary objects. Why might a museum hold on to remains but return more objects from the collection?
That, I think sometimes there could be a couple answers to that. I think one is often there's also something called unaffiliated funerary objects. It's a very technical term, which essentially means that maybe items that are known to be taken from graves are not affiliated with, or they don't no longer, the institution no longer knows which individual they might have been buried with. I think that's just one answer. I think that's a big question. And then I think in addition to that, I'm not sure. I guess there's just a lot more I could add, but I wonder what your next question might be.
Sure. Ash, go ahead.
I would also add that with the funerary objects, sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes the remains get returned, but the funerary objects do not. And that's sort of, we have seen situations where museums have split up collections or, you know, remains from the funerary belongings that were buried with them. So maybe one museum has the remains, the other museum has the belongings, and they make different determinations as to what to do with each of those.
So it's not necessarily the object, the funerary object, staying with the remains in all cases.
Yeah, sometimes, unfortunately, they do get split up. And, you know, with the historical records, it can be difficult to piece together what came from where and what goes with what.
We're learning about ProPublica's repatriation project with a pair of journalists from the newsroom. We have Ash New and Mary Hudetz. Share your questions, your views on repatriation. What surprises you about Native ancestral remains? 800-642-1234 is the number to call in. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. An ongoing ProPublica investigation and its searchable database monitors Native American remains in the possession of federally funded institutions around the country that have yet to be returned to tribes. Add your voice to this issue of repatriation and the holding on to human remains of thousands of Indigenous people in collections. Call in with questions at this number, 800-642-1234. We have ProPublica investigative journalists Mary Hudetz and Ash New with us. Let's bring in Mary now in Lake Geneva. Mary, hi. What is your question?
Hi. I'm wondering, we're talking about institutions returning and repatriating items, but what about private collections? There's a lot of people that collect things, you know, pick up things, buy things. I think there's a trading network online maybe about these things, and how would an individual go about trying to repatriate any items?
Mary, thank you. Mary Hudetz, would you like to respond there?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. So I would just note real quick from the front end, our investigation very much focused on institutions because of the data that we had available, the records, and the law also gave us sort of a clear framework for accountability to see how repatriations should go or might go. As far as private collections go, that is not governed by the law. NAGPRA only applies to federally funded institutions. However, there are, you know, some laws in place that might decide, you know, it's no longer it's no longer legal to collect from Native American gravesites, for instance. However, families may have items in their possession that that come from a time that preceded laws that outlaw that sort of trafficking. And
have you found, have you found in your own reporting that the private marketplaces and the issue of the remains being in private hands, is that an equally concerning thing?
I think for tribal nations, it very often can be. You know, I'm in the Southwest, and I think there's a lot of concern here about, you know, at least recent, relatively recent grave looting that has occurred. And then also, I think, and, you know, also there have been items that were maybe purchased or sold or taken out of tribal communities many, many decades ago, and that tribes understand to be sacred or belong to their entire community and do want return to them. And that end, I think I have seen some diplomacy sort of approaches among tribes, or at least one in particular where here where I live, to seek the return of an item. And then also I think tribes do often very often review like foreign auction houses, catalogs or different catalogs to see what may be out there that, that belongs to them. And so, yeah, a lot of conversation on that front too.
Ash, can you explain how universities and museums came to amass so many Native remains in the first place?
It's a wide variety of methods. The institutions that we've been looking at, in large part, there's a few phases in the history of the country that led to the accumulation of these Native American remains. The first one that we discuss in sort of one of our main stories is that institutions in kind of the 1800s were just starting back then to try and like amass something that we call encyclopedic collections. So they were really trying to compete with one another and trying to sort of collect what they could from all across the country, competing with museums in Europe as well to try and get the most prestigious collections. And that's when we see a lot of the sort of before archaeology and anthropology established themselves as relatively academic fields. You know, it was much more of a Wild West scenario, people just taking, looting, you know, stealing from battlefields and that sort of thing. And then in the next sort of phase, we see something of the professionalization of archaeology and anthropology in the country. There were a lot of federally sponsored excavations in tandem with infrastructure projects, big dams being built, highways, other kinds of large infrastructure projects in the Tennessee area. The TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, has a large number of remains from WPA, sort of Great Depression era excavations that were done in that time frame. And then you, after that, sort of see a slowdown. There's a variety of other sort of miscellaneous ways that remains have come into the hands of museums. A lot of private donors have donated or given their remains and collections to museums. And that's another way that we see museums sort of garner a motley of remains from very different sources with different provenance as well.
I want to turn now to burial mounds. Mary, the ProPublica Repatriation Project investigated as well places that are built on Native burial mounds. What did your investigation show about ancient burial mounds?
Yeah, I think our colleague Logan Jaffe actually did a really in-depth, important piece on burial, a certain burial mound in Illinois. But the answer to your question goes, I think, back a little bit, at least in part, to something Ash noted really early. Burial mounds are very much are something we see were built in like the Midwest, the Southeast, much parts of the country where tribes were forcibly removed from by the United States during, you know, U.S. Western expansion. And so that's, I think, a large portion of what we see in our data does come from burial mounds, at least in part. One answer could be that it has to do with removal, the fact that tribes are no longer living where their ancestors, these ancestors had been buried. And then that has complicated, or institutions have seen that as complicating the process of repatriation, because repatriation is very much about tribes explaining, having a sense of place and knowing where they came from and knowing where their ancestors had also lived and been buried.
Ash, where does the database go from here? And what are the next steps for reporting on the repatriation project?
So one thing that we've seen with the release of this database is that a number of museums and institutions have sought to update their records with the federal program that manages them. A lot of these museums and institutions, maybe they submitted records in the 90s and haven't updated them since. And so we've gotten a few messages saying that they're planning on updating their data, and can we please update the database once they do that? And so we're looking to update our database probably in the next couple of weeks or so to give people a more revised and fresh set of numbers. And then I think in the future, you know, we have a couple of more stories planned to be published, focusing on specific institutions that we've identified in our reporting.
Yeah, keep the work going. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Ash New is a reporter, designer, and developer. Mary Hudetz is a reporter focusing on tribal issues throughout the Southwest. Both lead reporters in ProPublica's investigation into returning ancestral remains to Native tribes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.